This week, and for the second week running, Mr. Pickerel has found me yet another glory hunter. Welcome to Grassroots Plus, sponsored by Gusto Homes.
Gusto Homes has been innovating in the residential house building sector for over 25 years, with a focus on building clean energy homes in a sustainable community. Well, this evening, our guest is making a welcome return, Groundhopper, Manchester United supporter, also runs the Twitter accounts Premier League to non-league, and a new addition, the Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire football Twitter account. Good evening, Luke Castledine. I hope you're well.
Good evening to you both. Thank you for having me back. A repeat United offender, so we'll see how I go this time.
Oh, I'm sure we're going to end up equal by the end of the night. But before we get to Luke, before we get to the banter, and before we get to some opinions, which I think I'm going to agree with as well. There's an interesting one. Me agreeing with Man United supporter. News, gossip, a train ride. How do they do it in Italy this week? All to come. But before all that, Mr. Pickerel looks back to last weekend, starting in the UCL Step 5 North Division.
Pride of place this weekend goes to Lincoln United following their penalty shootout victory at what is reputably the world's oldest football ground in the fifth round of the FA Vars. A crowd of 1,287, including a large contingent making the short journey to Sheffield-based NCL side Hallam, saw the match finish all square at two apiece before the Whites goalkeeper Jack Steggles produced the save that sets up a home quarter-final tie with the competition second favourites and previous winners Deal Town. While all that was going on, Sherwood Colliery quietly opened a 10-point lead at the top of the United Counties North with a 2-1 victory at Deeping. Melton Town returns to winning with a vengeance, 6-0 at AFC Mansfield, with Tyrese Coben-Palmer hitting five of them. Loughborough Students beat Skegness Town 3-0 in the battle of the playoff teams, while a single Fraser Bayliss goal was enough for his Boston Town team to get all 3 points at Belper United. Bottom of the table, Hucknall Town lost for the 18th time in 25 outings, and for a second week running, it was Sleaford Town that did the damage. 2-0 victors in front of a crowd of 227. Away from the league, Ashby Ivanhoe reached the last four of the League Cup with a 3-2 victory over Newark and Sherwood United in a match that was played at Quorn as the Leicestershire's team pitch continues to refuse to dry out.
And I'm sure this first is deluge. He's not going to help them at all. Before we go on to step six, Dave, an important match on Tuesday night that we both attended, and I think it saw Newark and Sherwood press the safety button.
I think so. Ended up a 2-0 win to Newark and Sherwood at Pinchbeck after, I guess, a not a nervy, but a 20-minute sort of getting used to everything and all the sort of new faces getting to know each other. I think they ran out comfortable winners in the end.
Yeah, they did, and not only the 3 points to the tally, the three further points has taken them away from Finchbeck, I think, sorts some any lingering worries out, and the new managerial partnership that they've got at Newark and Sherwood does seem to be working very well. Very rarely on this show we will criticise grassroots referees. Okay, Premier League referees, not a problem, but grassroots referees, I very rarely criticise. The one on Tuesday night, and one of his linesmen, who I'm absolutely sure was trying to land a plane on an aircraft carrier with his flags, left a little bit, in our opinion, to be desired. I'm not going to say they ruined the game, Dave. I think they actually made the game because the entertainment value was brilliant.
It was. It's very easy for us to look at it with Newark and Sherwood United tinted glasses on, but the Pinchbeck bench and their spectators were looking at it equally. And it got to the point in the end, everybody was just like, wow, what's that decision about? And in the end, I think when they got one right, there was actually a round of applause, wasn't there, when the laughing stopped.
From both sets of supporters and from both benches, yeah. I mean, I'm absolutely sure they tried the best, but let's just say it wasn't their night and leave it at that. Right, next up, let's have a look at the world of step six.
The two matches we billed as bankers proved to be anything but. Leaders Bournemouth scrapped home by the odd goal in three at Ashtabula, while bottom club Renwrath produced possibly their best performance of the season to claim a valuable point at Newark Town. The Blues, however, do remain in third place, but will have more than one eye on Dunkirk and Birstall. They're 5 and 8 points behind them with two matches in hand as the playoffs chase compacts by the week. Second place Clipston have a 10-point cushion over the chasing pack, five clubs chasing three places. And that was thanks to a 4-1 victory at Clifton, while a last-minute goal put a severe dent in Blackstone's hopes of joining them in the playoff party. It also gave Gedling a fifth away victory of the season. The Wrens point at the YMCA keeps them 2 points adrift of a Selston side who have had to rely upon a late Jacob Barris goal to secure them a point at Leicester St Andrews. And that's three, they're still three behind Aspervale. And that's the race to avoid the drop and out of the pyramid. Southwell City's 25 should be enough to keep them in the pyramid football, but it was enough. Another disappointing day for the Zebras. They lost by a single goal at Sandyacre Town. Into the Northern Counties East League, three second-half goals from visitors Staveley saw a gallant Ollerton fall to a defeat as the relegation trapdoor widens by the week. At the other end of the table, Shirebrook Town moved up set to second with two second-half goals, enough to beat Nostell, while Retford United are up to fourth after coming from behind at Dronfield.
Newark Town will be smiling a little bit more after Dunkirk managed to get beaten at home by Saffron Dynamos earlier on this week. So the gap is still there. But that gap, David, under Clifton and above Blackstones, you're going to try and get five teams into three places, and there's an awful lot of football on some very soggy mud baths still to play before the season ends, apparently in April. I think there's still time for some peculiar results in that division, and I think now it is down to whichever of those three from five are prepared to dig in and do the dirty stuff.
I think you're right. I mean, the problem is most of the teams at the top were all fighting for the same positions last year, weren't they? So they're all capable of doing it. So it's going to be a very interesting 6 or 7 weeks. And who knows, maybe the league will have to apply for an extension as some of the other leagues have done.
I think they've got to. I'm not sure we're going to talk about it later on or not, but I think Southwell's got 8 games to play on. Eight home matches to play at Brinkley, 8 or 10 home matches to play at Brinkley. They've only played 5 there since the middle of November. And now they're going to be expected to play 8 there almost back to back on a pitch that is heavy before first is deluge. I think there's going to be a lot of problems between now and the end of the season, but we'll have to see. You never know, the sun might shine. What they love to call now the regional feeder leagues, or to me, you step 7 and below.
Nettleham continued their march towards the Lincolnshire Football League Championship with a routine 3-0 victory over Louth Town Reserves, while Pyramid hopefuls Crowell Colts are up to third place after a fourth consecutive victory on the road. That was 4-1 at Skegness Reserves. Curtin Brickworks' recent poor form continues in the Central Midlands Alliance, the Brickies having to stage a second-half comeback to salvage a home point against RHP, Jack March netting all 3 goals. No such problems for Blidith, 2 Tristan Burrell goals helping them ease past Long Bennington. The incident-packed Game of the Day award goes to Notts Senior League match at Station Road between Collingham and Woodthorpe. A 90th-minute winner from Jojo Bilton saw the Villagers collect 3 points, while the visitors' own collection was 3 red cards. The Boston and district title race looks to be over with contenders Fulbeck United losing at home to Northgate Athletic. No such problems for the reigning champion Spilsby, whose victory over Horncastle Reserves opens a 3-point step with 2 matches in hand.
And if you think it's wet up here, try going to Cornwall.
Another weekend and another washout as the monsoon season continues in West Cornwall. On a brighter note, the mighty Lizard Argyle Reserves did manage their 10th point of the season with a 2-2 draw at 4th place Mullion.
There we see. We always find some football somewhere. Right, this is Grassroots Plus with Dave Pickerel, Mick Bradley and our special guest, Luke Castledine. Right, and it's time that we put him to work, isn't it? So we're going to start. Nice, easy one for him. Since he was last with us, he's decided to make his life even busier and he set up something he calls Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire football. And you can find that on what I call Twitter.
Yeah, Luke, How important is local football to you? And perhaps give us a little bit of a lowdown on your thinking behind setting up the Derbyshire and Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire football page. I know why you've done it, but your thinking behind that.
I'll start with why I set it up to start with. I think it gets mentioned every week now, but the late, great Malcolm Storer, his blog was a go-to for results and fixtures every Saturday evening, Tuesday morning, Thursday night. And it got to the start of the season. I thought, someone probably needs to take that on for his legacy or just for local football. And I thought, I'll give it a go. I got it down to a routine. And it took me a few months to get it right, where I can do it this time of day, get the fixtures in, get it prepped. And I thought, I'll just give it a little, whether it be a younger swing or a bit of a more technical side spin on it, that I then produce my graphics, do specific graphics for. I did a Valentine's Day one with a little menu and some silly puns, and try and just get the word of non-league and our grassroots out there, whether it be us that are local that go and watch our teams and want to check on the results in one place, or Grand Hoppers football fans who think, oh, I'm visiting family up in Nottingham this weekend, can I sneak off for 2 hours? I'm near here, I'll have a quick look. The importance of local football, it's special, isn't it? It's a system that not many countries have, which you'll go into with Italy later. But whether you've got, and I'll use clubs around me. You've got 800 at Ilkeston, you've got 80 at Selston, or you'll have 8 people watching their mates on a Sunday morning. You'll see the same faces, you'll get a nice welcome, you'll be appreciated. And the lads that you're watching are just lads you'll sit next to in the pub. I've watched plenty of lads I went to school with. And you make friends from it. It's something that, I don't know, I tried to describe it more as a something that just, it's special.
We'll talk about that one in question two a little bit. Let's go back to Twitter. So what you're actually doing is first of all, you are producing a what's on guide. That's the first job, and then you're updating that what's on guide in this day and age with probably a what's off guide. And then afterwards, you're putting the results on. So you've got a service, haven't you? You are giving Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire football fans that service. This is what you want to go and watch this week. Hang on a minute, this is not being played. This was played, and this is what happened. And that is absolutely spot on, because that's why it was so popular, and that's why it is still popular, because it is telling you there. I mean, not everybody can go on to FA full time and work it out from there. And you also want a little bit more homeliness, don't you? I mean, I love your graphics, to be honest, because it's taking me back to Teletext days.
Yeah, so it's essentially, I thought I'll put a spin on it. The Teletext was my third go at having a design for the fixtures. But I find myself busier throughout January than I did throughout September doing it. Because you get it ready, you get it prepped, you get all your graphics out, and I make them ready to go on Friday. And then I'll put my Friday night games out, and then I'll get a message from the club 20 minutes later going, oh, we're off now. And you spend your Saturday mornings. Now I've got into a routine where I'll check 10:30, 12 o'clock, before I inevitably set off to the game I'll end up at. And then as soon as I get home on the laptop, update the results, get it out as quick as I can. I did do a team of the day at some point. I'll knock that on the head a little bit because there weren't games getting played. And then selecting I started with the games of the day. I'll always try four different steps, with the home sides being a Nottinghamshire or Derbyshire side, in the way of, yeah, I appreciate teams. Like last week, I could have easily put Ilkeston going to Macclesfield. But I think we need to promote people to get to the grounds in our area. Hey,
that's brilliant, because you want to guide people in. Yeah, Ilkeston fans will go to Macclesfield. But if you want to go and watch a football match, you won't get in the car and go to Macclesfield. I wouldn't have thought, but you are likely to go 5 miles down the road to Ena or Eastwood or Selston or somewhere like that. And it needs someone to say, well, this is the game this weekend. This is the standout game this weekend. Because again, a lot of average supporters have not looked to see, Christ, that's first against second or top against bottom or whatever. You're telling them that. Luke, that's fantastic. You've got to keep that going, mate. You're building it every week and it's getting more and more popular every week, I'm sure. It's just the hard work in doing it every single week. And at the moment, your biggest enemy, like everybody else, is the weather out there, isn't it? Because you can't do anything with any conviction thinking that's going to happen at the weekend.
No, I did one. It was a couple of weeks ago. And I think they ended up being three games on. So I'd made all my graphics and then I sat at home on the Saturday morning at 11 o'clock and thought, I've brought this three games in the area. I think it was Eastwood, Newark Town and somebody else. I thought, right, I'll get a little frozen football pitch. I'll use the frozen Disney film fonts and I'll make a little three-team graphic. This is what you've got left. Take your pick.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Right, the second half of that question is coming up in a minute. But first of all, we're back with David. And what we've entitled this one, when did you last play at home? And a win for a winless team. And he'll be quite chuffed about it because it's his neck of the woods.
Well, we all know about the plight of Ashby Ivanhoe, but they're not the only team to suffer from a soggy bottom this season. So the short answer is no. Thanks to our friends at Non-League Matters, this is how things stood on Monday. County Durham side Washington haven't played at home in the league for 141 days. Jarrow are on 127 days, Ashby Ivanhoe on 113, Liscard 92, Chessington and Hook 85, and St Dennis are also on 85. Camel Laird haven't played away for 106 days, Brandon United haven't played away for 99. Wessex Step 6 side New Milton finally got their first victory of the season on the 23rd attempt. A 3-0 victory over the team immediately above them in the league, AFC Aldermaston.
Come on, it's your neck of the woods.
Well, I'm pleased to see New Milton have won on the 23rd attempt. However, it's probably a bit late in the season for them. They've got a nice setup for Step 6. And they'll certainly grace the Step 7 league if they do go down. Looking at some of these teams, though, that haven't played at home for, 141 days, where's the money coming from? Because there's no bar, there's no programme sales, there's no gate money. There's absolutely nothing.
The farmers, from my days when I used to work for a living, the farmers have always said, however bad the harvest is, it's never, ever not been gotten in. That's bad English, but you know what I mean. Can either of you see this football season not finishing?
It will finish, but I suspect there'll be some extensions to leagues, and I think we'll have the farcical situation again that, I mean, it happened to Selston at the end of last season. Was it 5 games in 7 days? Just as an example. And they're going to be ending up going, playing probably Tuesday, Wednesday, perhaps have Thursday off, Friday, Saturday, Sunday off, and then going out on a Monday as well. And there's going to be some really stupid results because not everybody can play for the same team 5 times in a week. I think I can see it probably going to certainly end of April, well into May for some teams, I'm sure.
Problem that I have, Luke, and see what you think on this one. The problem that I have is that these pitches that haven't been played on for all this length of time are now just a muddy mess. You may just get one game on them, roll it, play it, but after that, it's going to resort back to a ploughed field. It's not just going to come right unless it doesn't rain between now and April, and that ain't going to happen. They're not going to come right. And okay, Eastwood might make a fortune out of hiring the pitch out, YMCA might make a fortune, and some of the others might make a fortune. Newark and Shearwood play Ashby at Quorn on their carpet. But they all want paying for them. When you're not playing at home, you've got no income coming in. Teams are going to struggle, Luke, aren't they?
They are. I remember a season, I think it was 17, 18. Heena ended up playing Saturday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday to finish their season off. And I think you might end up like that again with some teams. I mean, one that springs to mind just from doing the blog is Playcross never seem to play at home at the minute. I know you had them on a few weeks ago. As for the pitchers, it's going to take a bit of shrewdness, because once you play one and you get one on, that a ref might think, oh, I'll let it slide today. If you're then at home Tuesday night, it's you might as well call that off after the game Saturday.
You don't want to stand the chance, are you?
And then to then factor in that they might have to play Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, all at home, without having to use someone else's facilities, and the guys that have got the 3Gs that fit the ground grading are going to be the winners of that, because they've got the facilities there, but you're not going to get them for free. And it's going to be more that the clubs then have not going to get their match day funds, because that's going to go straight out of that into paying for the pitch fees, which is what they've lost out on because they've not played for 100 days.
It's in a mess. There's no other way of looking at it. It is in a mess. And if it, you know, if the weather doesn't start being helpful very soon, then personally, unless the FA play ball and put another month on the end of the season, and you can't rely on that happening, I'm not sure where this is all going. Right. Luke's one of those rare brand of people that seems as happy watching a professional team as he does a non-league team. Most people that I know are sort of one or the other. They'll follow their professional team here, there and everywhere, or they'll go watching grassroots football. So that opens up a couple of questions for us. So the way that we've put it is, what do you enjoy the most, watching a mediocre Premier League side or grassroots football?
Yeah, I mean, you would think the differences are obvious and massive, or in reality, are they? They're both trying to achieve the same goal, and money, unfortunately, now is king at both levels. So, yeah, which do you prefer?
I think it depends on my mood. So sometimes, I mean, I work at home, so sometimes you can just spend all day at home and you think, oh, do you know what, I just want to get out of the house and watch a game tonight and get some fresh air. But then sometimes when it's a big game on, well, not necessarily on Sky, because I'm going to the game, you're up for it. When it's a Liverpool in town or a City, and you think, right, or a big European game, as an example, I know we're not in it anymore, but that's what you get up for. But they're more alike than anyone would give it credit for. I try and sell non-league to my mates I go to United with all the time. Some go, some enjoy it. I think the positive of you can have a pint while you sat watching, stood on the terraces watching, is a very big selling point that I don't think a lot of clubs necessarily use enough of. But I'd say a lot of the time recently, football's ruined a good day when I'm going up to Manchester, and non-league, you just enjoy the football for what it is. It's the purest game it is now. I think your biggest difference with watching grassroots to Premier League is the grassroots is what football used to be. And I'm seeing this as a 33-year-old that maybe think I'm older than I probably am, but you've got no VAR, you've got no, you just, there'll be, your referees might not be up to scratch. It's a decision's given, you get on with it, it's there.
Yeah. I mean, I've got to admit, I'm with you, because I've got a grandson up at uni in Newcastle, and bless him, he seems to have a knack of getting tickets to go and watch Newcastle United. And I've been up there 3 or 4 times this season. And there is something special, isn't there, about being in a big ground with a lot of noise, passionate support. And I like to go and see a Premier Division game live. I'm not kidding. I don't bother with Match of the Day. You get nothing out of that. But I like to go and see one live, because I like to see the pre-match. I like to see how players operate. I like to see how the bench operates. And then I look at non-league and see, it's a bit like mini-me when you look at non-league, isn't it? Because they're all trying to do the same thing on a scale quite a few degrees less, but my trip to a Premier League game, I've got eyes everywhere wanting to see how things operate. And yes, you are right. If the team you're going to support doesn't win, it's on a hell of a long way home. Whereas you go a non-league and you don't win, I don't know if that's an age thing now. You're a very old 33, obviously. I don't know if it's an age thing now, but if your team, non-league team, doesn't win on a Saturday afternoon, maybe it's not all the be-all and end-all, because you're still going to go up in the bar afterwards and have a pint with the players and a laugh and joke and go home feeling that you've been part of something. And I think that's possibly the difference, isn't it? Because at grassroots, Luke, you feel part of something. At a Premier League game, maybe you are part of something, but you're not an integral part of something, are you?
100%. I mean, when you sent me this question over, I had a quick look of my last season just to compare of what I've done and what. And on this day last year, I went to watch Clay Cross play South Normanton. And from the 22nd to the 26th of Feb last year, I saw Clay Cross South Normanton. The next day, I went to Man United against Barcelona. The Saturday, I went to Selston against Leicester Nirvana. And then the Sunday was the League Cup final where we beat Newcastle. I had to get that in a little bit.
Yeah, by an offside goal and a foul that never was. But I'm not going to go. I wouldn't dream about going on about that. But carry on.
But the like you say, I know to United, I am a membership number and a bank account, essentially. Mm. They're bringing more rules in regarding to season tickets that are making it harder to hit the renewal criteria every year. The last away game I went to was 2 years ago because tickets are that hard to get. And on the other end, I think, yeah, your non-league side losers, you go, you have a part of the lads after. It probably hits the lads a little bit harder because no one likes losing. But you move on to Tuesday or the Saturday after and they get on with it and they're back at work Monday and it's just life. But I know going from the money is king and the haves and have-nots that and I don't think you'll mind me saying this, if I go and watch Ollerton, my £10 that I spend to get in and go and have a drink and a bite to eat is much more valued to Liam running that club than what my insert season ticket price cost me here at United, because easily replaceable at one, whereas that £10, I don't know what it'd buy Liam, but it'd give him a bit more of a chance.
That's actually a brilliant way to put it. It really is. And that leads me on to my next little question. And David, get involved in this one and answer this one. I'd really just put, are supporters important in football anymore? Let me put it another way. Are supporters important in Premier League games and are supporters important in grassroots games? I'll leave that to you two.
I think they're more important at grassroots now because, let's be honest, you could probably lock the doors at every single Premier League game this weekend, and the money that's coming in through the television, through the betting syndicates, through the the people abroad that are paying to watch it on telly, that are buying the merchandise, they're probably, I would think, at a few clubs having to pay for the policing, for the stewards, and putting the pies on and everything like that is probably more expensive than it's worth to them, where they can probably make a lot more money by not bothering to have supporters in the ground. Whereas you say you go to Ollerton, there's perhaps 100 people go there, they pay 5-6 to get in. Most people will have a go on the golden goal or the raffle or go and say, well, I've come out with a tenner, I'll spend my change. And that is far more important to them because Liam's not sat there thinking, oh, we only got 100 in, don't matter. Well, I bet we've sold 15,000 shirts over the weekend. You know, we've got the merchandise money and stuff like that. And they do appreciate it, the fact that, you know, players come up to you and talk to you in the bar. Whereas unless you're very, very lucky, you're doing a sponsorship at a big club, you might get to meet a player who's been paraded up to come and say hello and sort of thank you for coming and disappears. Whereas, I mean, I experienced on Tuesday night, we were talking to most of our players were coming up and chatting. Both benches were stood there chatting. I think, where else can you do that? You've watched a fairly entertaining game of football and pretty much everybody involved is all mingling around afterwards, having a laugh and a joke and whatever. So, I think grassroots supporters are more important, certainly valued more, I'm sure. Feel free to disagree.
No, I agree. Like I said, the with United, the criteria they've set us to renew for the season after next is you have to personally attend 17 out of the 19 league games, which
Oh,
I
dear.
think unless and if you don't, they refuse the right to let you renew. I think
That's
at
harsh.
top level at top level football, and I'd probably say the top six is the outliers here. They would much rather not have season ticket holders and have your hardcore 20,000 and have 20,000 tourists every game that are going to
Yeah.
put £500 in the club coffers by spending £200 in the club shop, £200 on a meal, £100 on your tickets.
And that and
Whereas
that is that's what I call an Americanism, because that's the way it's going, isn't it?
yeah, 100%. And it's not, I don't feel valued by United. But I know at every non-league ground I go to, and when they retweet me graphics of the scores, or someone recognises me and comes up, you feel your value there.
And that's what it's all about, and that's why we go to non-league. Anyway, you're listening to Grassroots Plus, proudly sponsored by Gusto Homes, and the Alexa thing has been cracked. So for one final week, here's Mr. Pickerel will tell you how to use Alexa.
Alexa, play Grassroots Plus podcast.
You see, mine doesn't, but other people's does. So that is
Yeah.
absolutely, mine doesn't because it's turned off, so we don't make silly noises halfway through this podcast.
You can, if you can't get that to work, if you can't speak the King's English, you can also find us on Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, Player FM, and TuneIn, and many other podcast aggregation sites.
Yeah, almost anything but Five Live and TalkSport. Last week's big question. Oh dear, was this massive? We asked, what's the most scenic ground that you've been to? What's your favorite ground, sort of thing? What's the prettiest ground? And then we said we'd have a bit of a would tot up and announce the winner when Dave had done all his work. So the response, to say without exaggeration, it was absolutely massive and has kept Mr. Pickerel entertained for days.
It has, yes. Thank you to everybody there. It was I was still checking the responses and stuff, but some of the responses, Catherine or Xanadu Flipper said Home Park, the home of Coldstream FC at the foot of the Cheviot Hills. That's beautiful. Sam Ainsworth likes Gibraltar. Simon Ashbury said Keighley's Cougar Park Rugby League Ground was a nice setting for Steeton when they used to play there. George Webb said the Lesso Arena in northern Romania. David Jones, either Como or AFC Amsterdam, both very, very different. And one or two people kindly sent us pictures as well. Matt Harrison, I'm sure I'll think of a better answer later, but for sheer stunning backdrop, nothing has beaten going to watch Poprad in northern Slovakia with the snowy Tatras in the background. Mickey the Heed fan, Matlock's quite a picturesque ground, if I remember rightly. Fent said Blaenau Ffestiniog. Dave Bell said Mossley. Daniel Turner, there's only one answer, Abertillery Rhi Bluebirds. Ben Hopper said, I do love a good Welsh ground. He wasn't particularly specific. Craig Robertson said, San Diego Town was pretty nice. It was pretty cold, though, the day we went. Andy P, Bamburgh Castle. I doubt there's very few places better than this, though I was concentrating more on the match being the ref. I've also played cricket here. Andy Golds, I've been to so many places over the years. Matlock Town is a great view. North Ferriby for the train line that passes that looks like it's going through the stand. It's more funny than picturesque. Donald Twain, Church Stretton in Shropshire is actually picturesque, and I have to agree on that one. Glen Cobb, Woolacombe, the pitch is on the left-hand side as you drive down to the beach. Emma's Ground Guide, they said pretty good view at Edinburgh University. Rob Hornby, St Agnes FC, where the ball goes over the crossbar and it floats out to sea. Non-league dad, Malvern Town, lovely backdrop. I'd love to travel to the Rock in Wales, though, at some point. That's where Wrexham Ladies and Gresford play. Donat, and I hope I've got this name right, Askadandarov, said Tajikistan, hands down. Luke, you said it's Belper Town for me. And I mean, I said I like Belper Town in this country. At one end, you've got the church and the mill, the other end, rolling hills. It's also a fantastic club with great people. And rounding it off, Adam Gitting said Belper Town so far for me as well. So, out of that lot, that's actually three votes for Belper Town.
Right. So what David's going to do is going to be the arbitrator in all this, because he's going to look at some of the photos that they put on and some of the photos that's not there. He's going to find them, and he's going to announce sometime over the weekend on Twitter what the Grassroots Plus Most Scenic Ground Fans Award is.
Thanks for that.
No problem at all. It was either that or let me do it, and you won't let me do it because you know very well what the answer is going to be.
Yeah, I noticed you didn't come back and mention Lizard Argyle. Was it because there was too much flying seaweed and spray to actually get a decent picture the day you went there?
If you'd let me do it, like I suggested, you'd got your winner, hadn't you, straight away?
Yeah, well, that was obvious before you'd even set the question who'd won yours.
So no bias would come into it whatsoever. I would have been as fair-minded as I ever have. But I was banned, so you got yourself a job. So I promise you, over the weekend, Mr. Pickerill will announce his version, which will be our version, because we are democratic on this show, of the most scenic ground. I've got another question coming up later on, but in all seriousness, from both of us, thank you so much for taking time out for answering these questions. It's great to see. It's great that you're part of the show. And really, that's what we want. And that's what it's all about. Isn't that correct, Mr. Pickerill?
It is. Yeah, it is very, very nice when you see that. And I think I'd gone somewhere for about 10 minutes. I opened my phone and there's about 60 sort of notifications of something in Twitter. And I thought, what's happened? Has somebody important died or what's happening? And I see, and there's people are very kindly joined in. So, yeah, thank you so much for that. Yeah,
it's wonderful. Right, somebody else has got to join in because Luke's back to work again. And Luke lives in an area of North Nottinghamshire and bordering on Derbyshire there that you just seem to have to throw a stone to find a football team. I've always been intrigued how they can all survive. I've always been intrigued how friendly they are with each other and anything like that. So this is going to be 5 minutes now of a love fest for North Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire football, because the amount of clubs in a 20-mile radius is eastward is ridiculously high. And David's picked up on one of the clubs that announced something this last couple of weeks that is going to be a big loss for them, David.
That's right. I've always noticed when you sit in the stand at Eastwood, you can see the church at Hena behind the ground, which you can see from Hena's ground. And this week it's announced that Hena Town's Kian De Bruyne, he's retired after 10 years at the club. 161 goals in 265 appearances. That's a hell of a long time to be at a club. And that's consistently put that sort of goals in each season. Yeah, I think he's going to be a big loss. And I know you go to Hena quite a bit because I think I've seen you there at least twice.
Yeah, so firstly, Kino, as he's fondly known as, I actually go to United with him as well, which is a lovely little throwback. But yeah, it's been a pleasure watching him over the years for Hena, and he's had little stints at Pinkston here and there as well. And he's just a throwback centre forward. He's got good feet. He's big and strong. And he bullied his centre halves. As to the stone's throw of what is North Notts football, I think it's living here, it's great, because on any given Saturday or Tuesday, you've got Alfreton at step two, Basford and Ilkeston at step three, fancy little drive to Belper at step four. Step five, you've got Eastwood, Kimberley, Hucknall, Hena, step six, Selston, step seven, Allsworth, Pinkston, South Normanton, all within a 15-minute drive, 20 minutes if traffic's bad. And over the years, you have your little rivalries when teams are both on the ascendancy. From myself going back to watching Eastwood a lot, you think of a Easter Monday shootout in the Northern Premier League against Ilkeston, where there were 3,500, ended up being segregated. And then as a younger kid in the 90s, Eastwood and Hucknall was the big game. You had Brian Chambers as Eastwood manager and John Ramshaw as Hucknall manager, and they'd be full-on battles two or three times a season. But I think that's where it's good, because a lot of the players will know each other. You get your good battles. I think to spotlight Selston last year, and when they was at step five, their games when they played teams more local to them, they seem to do better. When they get the teams from further afield come, they I don't want to say there was less up for it, but maybe they got that extra 10% more and got some of their shock results against teams that they maybe knew better than others when they was in the Midland League with your Newark side. It stands out that if they played a Newark, they pushed on a little bit more than if Worcester City was coming and they come with a reputation with it, them not lads that they've played against throughout their careers.
I know the catchment here. You've got obviously you've got Mansfield and the top side of Nottingham is a catchment area. But then you're going into what I would term as the old mining towns and mining villages with not a great catchment area to support this amount of clubs. And that's what amazes me, Luke, that they all seem okay. Some have bad seasons. Some have good seasons, but they're all well-run clubs. They all seem financially safe. They've all got their own wonderful little grounds that they've had for donkey's years. And they just carry on and do well. And it amazes me how so many teams in such a small area does it. Is there a loyalty in players? Or is it a merry-go-round?
I think it depends on the club. I think you look at your Kimberleys, I use a good example. I think a lot of their squad's been settled from coming up 2 years ago. They have the odd one go, and when they do go, they normally go up a step. They very rarely go sideways. But I think some you do have your merry-go-rounds. I mean, Hucknall this year, for their struggles, I think they've worked their way through 60, 70 players now. But that comes with the territory of where they are in the league. I think a lot of the clubs have reeled off then, have had ups and downs over their existence. Being an Eastwood lad, Eastwood at one point were pushing National League North playoffs when they had a bit of back of money back in behind them, and they were getting 1,000 a game. But I think your core of 100, 150 are still going to the club now, and they're loyal to the town they're from. It's probably the throwback of the pit era for what the area is where you're loyal to your local town. And it doesn't overly bother me going to watch Eastwood or Kimberley or whoever because it's just for the love of the game. But I know some won't go and watch one of the other sides. They'd rather go and watch their reserves team play Step 8 because they're playing under the name of the town they're from.
When you go and watch Eastwood, because I think we've decided Eastwood is your non-league club. When you go and watch Eastwood at the end of the game, do you clap the opposition off?
Yeah, I
No, not you
tend
as
if I'm not in a
well.
if I tend to stay after a game if I'm not in a rush, I've not got to get anywhere after. You clap the players off because I think it's just the right thing to do. Whether it's to be fair, I'm the same at United. Win, lose, draw, you clap them off.
Yeah,
I'm
clap
not
your
one
own
that think
players off. Do you clap the opposition off?
it depends on the game, doesn't it? If
I don't know. Mr. Pickerel is an avid clapper of players when they go off the pitch at the end, and officials, which I've never got my head around, for that match. And I just wondered if it was unique.
I tend to clap the
Hello, here we
opposition
go.
if they've played fairly. I mean, a good example the other week, Heena beaten 3-1. They played a hard game, but there was no histrionics. There was no rolling around. There was no swearing. I know Jamie Slay got a bit carried away in the last couple of minutes with frustration. He threw an elbow, but majority of the fans around me clapped as well because they thought they'd played their part in a sporting, spectacle that we'd paid to see. Whereas there are sometimes teams that have done nothing but roll round on the pitch and scream and squeal, and they don't get clapped off. So, but no, I can't see why not. I mean, it's at the end of the day, football is sport, isn't it? It's a spectacle. It's not, it's not, it should be the other way around. It, the way some of the, you say you go to Manchester United, you've put X thousands of pounds into that club's coffer. They ought to be clapping you or thanking you for, your loyalty. Whereas you've pointed out they don't really want your loyalty because at the end of the day, they can fleece a lot more casuals. That'll just turn up once a season or whatever.
Never got my head around clapping the opposition off. Oh, well, right, moving on. Right, great railway journeys with grassroots answer to Michael Portillo. And for all those that was there on Tuesday night, you would have actually seen now he's taken to wearing red trousers. Right, part three of our look along what we call, what they call the poacher line, which is the line between Nottingham and Skegness. We got as far as Sleaford last time, so we're going to tell you about the bit about railways, but more to the point, a bit about the teams that play along that line. So we're going tonight from Sleaford to Boston with Mr. Portillo.
Well, there is a lot of poetic license. If I was wearing red trousers, your eyesight's a lot worse than I thought it was. Leaving the hills of the Lincolnshire Ridge behind the land to the east of Sleaford, it becomes flat as we enter the fen country, with fields of wheat being replaced by endless cauliflower, cabbage and Brussels sprouts. There has been a railway station in the village of Heckington since 1859, and in the golden age of steam, it was even warranted its own station master. The seventh man to hold the post was a certain Joseph Mills Reddish, who was in charge for 10 years commencing in 1922 before being transferred to Kimberley in what must have been a culture shock for him. This village has a thriving junior football club. Started in the 1990s, it now has teams at every age group. But the real gem in the village is its windmill, the only eight-sailed example of its type still standing in the UK and Europe. The Tower Windmill was built as a five-sailed mill in 1830 and turned into an eight-sailed mill after serious storm damage in the 1890s to 1992.
I'll tell you what, you wouldn't find this out in any other football podcast, would you?
No, I think there's a theme here. If it's not lifeboat, it's windmills with you now. In 1986,
I bet you know all about the windmill, though.
I didn't, actually. I know it's eight-sailed, but I didn't know about that bit. In 1986, the windmill underwent restoration. Further down the line, there's been a settlement at Swineshead since the Doomsday Book, but these days it's probably best known for its level crossings ability to hold up traffic on the busy A17. The railway station itself was opened in 1847, but with today's service pattern of two stopping trains each day, passengers could be in for a long wait. The football club hosts a senior team in Division 1 of the Boston League, backed up by a junior section. That club celebrated its centenary in 2019, making a clean sweep of the four trophies and having Ray Parlour as a guest speaker at the celebration dinner. The championship trophy has made the short journey from Boston a remarkable 12 times. For the next few miles, the line runs adjacent to the A1121 road and the South 40-foot drain. Also known as the Black Sluice Navigation, it's the main channel for land drainage in the Lincolnshire Fens. It lies between Gutham Gout near Bourne and the Black Sluice pumping station on the Haven at Boston. The drain has its origins in the 1630s, when the first scheme to make the fenland available for agriculture was carried out by the Earl of Lindsay, and it has been steadily improved since then. Water drained from the land entered the Haven by gravity at certain states of the tide until 1946, when the Black Sluice pumping station was commissioned. It's certainly quite an interesting line to ride along, isn't it?
Oh, it is. You wouldn't think there's anything, but round every corner. The trouble is there isn't that many corners, but yes, it is. Black Sluice pumping station is near Wibberton, and that's where we're going to start next week with Wibberton. What I picked up from that, though, David, is that villages like Heckington and Swineshead, Heckington hasn't got a senior team at the moment, but the junior team is very, very strong, as it's at the tall levels. And so with Swineshead, which again is only a little village, but they've both got thriving junior sections, as well as the second one having adult football. And we're seeing that less and less in the villages in Nottinghamshire, but you get out into the villages of Lincolnshire and it's there, possibly because it's more remote. I don't know.
It could be. They're a bit of a community hub, aren't they? Luke was saying a little bit earlier about people support the team with their town name in it. And for the kids, there's probably a certain amount of pride playing football on a Saturday morning or Sunday morning. If you live in Swineshead, for Swineshead, or if you live in Heckington, for Heckington against the next local village. So it's great. But yeah, it's something for the kids to focus on, isn't it? And get involved with and feel part of.
Yeah, and I think it's good. And we're going to learn more and more about this as we go further and further into the depths of Lincolnshire. Right, Luke's closing in on actually watching live 100 games this season, and we're still in, or only in February, if you like. So I don't think there's any better person to tell us who he thinks is going to win some of the local leagues and who's going to come a cropper in some of the local leagues. So, Luke, it's time to get your thinking head on the football that you've seen. Who have you seen, starting with the United Counties North, who have you seen that's particularly impressed you?
Before you do that, just to let you know, in the last 2 minutes, a certain Mr. Rockley has pinged up and said, just to remind you two gentlemen, based on our predictions earlier in the season, tonight's episode should be named The Third from Bottom Meets Rock Bottom in the Dark Horses Predictions. All yours, sir.
Yeah, maybe I'm not the best person to do this, because I, in my notes, I've predicted Eastwood to win the league, Sleaford to be in the playoff winners, and Newark and Sherwood to be dark horses, as JD might have something up his sleeve. So maybe I'm not the most qualified with the eye test. I did predict Sherwood Colliery the season before, I will say that, and I got told off by their manager when they didn't do too well.
Okay, then, so, we'll kick our insight into touch. You've seen what two-thirds of the season has brought. What do you think the last third of the season is going to bring? And that's what you're going to have your winners and losers in, isn't it? So this is, let's forget the first bit, the projections, and let's look now at what we think might happen.
I think looking at UCL North, I don't think you can look past Sherwood. I think Lincoln might now have their straying eye on the Vars. You get so far in the Vars, you start thinking about Wembley. I know they're against the second favourites that are left in it, but I think you get to a certain point of the season where you'd rather have points on the board than games in hand, and I think that's the position Sherwood are in at the minute. They seem to get one in, strengthening when they need to. Remember, would it have been late November? They brought Will Norcross back, who, I don't know if you know him, but he's the little lad with the Alice band and the tape around his wrists. He went off to play for Emily for a little bit, and they got him back, and he just kicked them into another gear. I don't think you can look past them. Playoffs, I think there could be anyone's, I think, on their day, with how everyone seems to want to kind of bottle getting a playoff position. You look every Saturday and Melton's drop points and Students will then drop points and Eastwood are in it at one point and then I think 7 points adrift, and there's just the funny results coming every Saturday that you think, does anyone actually want to get into the playoffs here?
I agree with you. I agree. I mean, Sherwood's opened a 10-point gap now. Okay, Lincoln's got three games in hand. We know all that. But, you know, I'd rather have those 10 points. I go back to that Lincoln midweek game at Heena, when Heena put 5 past them 3 days before they were supposedly playing against Hallam in the Vars, a match that got postponed. And I would guess that as you've hit the nail on the head, Luke, by saying that Lincoln have got their minds on other things now, and the minds are on the FA Vars. I still think they'll become the second team, because I think playoff-wise, they are the class above anything else that's in the playoffs. So if you want the promotion, Sherwood as champions and Lincoln will go up as playoff winners. I think we're agreed on that one, aren't we?
100%. You can't look past them two.
At the bottom end, after Newark and Sherwood's victory over Pinchbeck, I think it's between Hucknall and Pinchbeck. Pinchbeck have got 8 games left this season, 7 of which are at home, including a match against Hucknall. Hucknall have got nobody to play in the top 5 in their remaining 9 games. It's a difficult one to pull, because I think Hucknall of late have been very close to getting decent results, but they haven't quite got over the line.
I went when they played Eastwood, and Eastwood got a last-minute equaliser, and for 65 minutes, it was Hucknall's to lose. And I think they've now got a settled squad. They are finding a way of playing. And I think if they can pick up a point here and there, leading to that Pinchbeck game, and then that kind of becomes, I think it's the third game before the end of the season for both of them, that kind of becomes winner stays up territory kind of game, which you hope everyone comes out for.
Pretty much a cup final, isn't it?
100% a cup final.
Yeah, it really is. I think coming up from Division One, David, if you're still with us, do join in. Coming up from Division One, I think Bourne, obviously, they've got themselves a budget and it's obviously working, and they're light years in front of everybody else. And Clipston have opened up a gap. But personally, I'm pleased to see Clipston having a good season. They've had a few rough seasons, Luke, and it's nice to see them on the way back.
Very much so. I went last night to their semi-final against Basford. They was in it up until right at the end. And I think, minus the odd funny result, I thought they might have pushed Bourne a little bit more. It was looking December time that both had lost one game each and they were going blow for blow. But I think it's the same as the North Division. If you're stopping Clipston going up, you're winning a playoff against them, and you're going to have to be at it on your day to stop them, because they've got some good pedigree in their squad that's already step five pedigree that they've got in and are
David,
showing that.
They definitely are. David, Newark, Kirby Muxlow, Dunkirk, Birstall, Harrowby, and possibly Blackstones. You've got to pick three from there. I think Newark's got enough to go up. Birstall's got enough to go up. But there's every week there seems to be some silly results.
They do. I mean, looking at the top half, you've got Kirby Muxlow have actually played more games than everybody else by virtue of the fact that they've had quite a few home games, and with them having an artificial pitch, they've got their games ahead. If they all win the games, and I've not seen who's still got to play each other, Bourne can actually achieve 111 points. Clipston can only get to 99. Newark Town can only get to 89 with what they've got left. And then there's a gap then. If Kirby Muxlow are on 82, they can actually be overtaken by Dunkirk, Birstall and Harrowby. They can actually all get more points than Kirby Muxlow. So I know Newark Town, I think they've won everything they need to. They've had a little bit of a slip in the last couple of weeks. They do have the disadvantage. I think, is it 8 of their last 9 games are away from home?
Yeah.
Which might not go well for me saying, particularly as it's a bit sloppy at the moment. The pitch at the YMCA is nice and flat. It's a good quality pitch. And they might just suddenly find they're coming up against teams that have perhaps playing 2 or 3 times a week. That might go against them. I don't know. It's very, very difficult to tell. But outside Bourne and Clipston, I wouldn't want to put my mortgage on any of the others being dead certs.
It's a club that finds themselves some form. If you can string half a dozen wins together, you'll be going up or you'll be going into the playoffs. But you've got to be able to do that first. Back to your neck of the woods, Luke, and I'm going to jump about a little bit now. We saw Claycross join the pyramid last season. Are we going to see Pinkston do it this season?
Oh, that's a good one, because I think I went to one of the Pinkston South Normanton games and it was exactly what you'd expect. I think there were 2 red cards, there were late challenges, it would have been a tough one to ref. I'd like to hope, just with South Normanton's history of leaving a league and having to go down to step 7 because they dropped out of step 5, that possibly Pinkston deserved that chance. They've been nearly men quite a few times. I'd like to hope they've got enough about them. They're a good club. Not that South Normanton aren't. South Normanton also are a good club. But I think it's probably just Pinkston's time, and next year will be Normanton's, I think, in that league. But again, Pinkston's got the points on the board. Normanton's got the game in hand. So you'd like everyone to be on the same amount of games this time of year, but it's never going to happen, is it?
No, it's not. Slightly out of your area, but closer to you than closer than the... What do you make of Durden District and Doncaster City? Or Motorsport, what do you make of Doncaster City signing 3 international players? I mean, we talk about football and money. I mean, crying, there's got to be some up there.
It was weird seeing it come through Friday and Saturday, wasn't it? That you've got, and I counted it at the time because I thought I'll send a bit of a mocking tweet that the 3 that they signed had exactly 100 international caps. And I was stood watching LP United at Eastwood and saw Dern went 1-0 up and had a little fist bump going, go on. Cause everyone knows Dern also pay, but obviously not at the level that Doncaster City did. And I think as a kind of a moral to the story, that the two subs that Doncaster City brought on that actually won the game were their two top goal scorers for the season that had clearly been dropped for the names that came in and won them the game.
And that's the bit I don't like, because these names that have come in are not going to be at Doncaster for more than 5 minutes before they're gone again. Yet the lads that's got Doncaster to where they are, second in the table, are treated shockingly, and suddenly you find yourself on the bench. And I can't blame them if they decided to go somewhere else. It's not what football at this level is all about. Finally, North Eastern Counties Division One, local sides, Shirebrook and Retford going for promotion. I know Retford United are one of David's favourite teams. I don't think Shirebrook are far behind in his favourite team list.
I've always said with Retford United, the fans are fine. It's just over the years, they have a bit of a record of flashing the cash and not being very gracious in the way they win or lose. Shirebrook have thrown a lot of money at football, at the division in the last couple of seasons, haven't they, really? Or in the last season and a half, I guess. What has surprised me is how well Beverley Town have taken to that division. They, I don't know whether there's money gone in there, but they sort of came up with it. We spoke to them about a year and a half ago, was it, Mick? They got a plan. Floodlights were coming in. They were bringing the ground up to ground grading, and they were going to have a good go at step six. And they've had more than a good go at step six, I'd suggest. I don't know. I think probably experience-wise, I think probably if you're going to have to put a line between a cigarette paper between Retford United and Shirebrook, I think Retford United have probably got the backing and the people behind the scenes just to push them that bit further, I suspect.
3 points separate the top five teams in that division. Like, Luke, one final question on this little section. Give me a team to watch over the next 5 years from your 20-mile radius from Eastwood. A team to watch that's going to, in 5 years' time, you're going to say, Luke Castledine told me they was going to do well.
Oh, I think 5 years in non-league football is a long time, isn't it?
It is. But that's why we have specialist guests.
I think off the pitch, and this might be me being biased because I'm an Eastwood lad, but their technical partnership with Benfica, I think in 5 years' time, you'll really potentially see the rewards of it for the youth setup. Maybe not the seniors. Obviously, they're not going to get Benfica lads over on loan unless they end up having five promotions in 5 years. But I think if you see a lad from Nottingham signed up in Benfica's academy in 5 years' time, I think that's where you're looking at that success. It's a funny partnership that you wouldn't ever expect to see. Arguably the biggest club in Portugal, a technical partner with Eastwood community. But I think if that goes how they want it and how they seem to be promoting it and their ambition with it, I think it'll be something that maybe other European sides look at to get a foothold into the English player market.
So Eastwood on the way back. That's what we're really saying. Right, next up, it's a little bit with the predictions game. We play this every week now because we're trying to prejudge what the FA are going to do at the end of the season, which is very difficult because the FA don't even know what they're going to do at the end of the season. But questions are asked about different subjects every week, and we're just really relaying them on to you, David.
Yeah, well, questions are being asked about clubs that ground share. The rules seem to state that you must have played on your named ground the previous season to entering the pyramid. Goulston Reserves will almost certainly win the Anglian combination, but like Shropshire League champions elect Ludlow Town, they've used at least two grounds already this season. First question will be is, how will the FA react to that? That's anybody's question. The Peterborough League has two applicants and they both are aware that wait their ground fate, but both have other problems. Netherton sit a massive 16 points off a top place, while Oakham United are 11 points off. And it's the same story in Cambridgeshire, which beats St Mary's, should walk the ground grading, but they currently sit in 10th in the table, and on current form, we don't expect them to make any form of challenge to get into the top five.
It's just like throwing 120 quid away, isn't it, really? I know you've got, you know, because you're not going to get your money back if you don't qualify. And realistically, you're sort of 10th out of a 12-team division. It's hey-ho. But anyway, so we wait and see on that one. It's this ground grading, which the ground shear rule, which is going to be interesting just to see if the FA want to take on a team like Gorson. We will see. Right. This is the bit where we talk about memorable matches. We've all been to memorable matches. Some stick in the mind for the right reasons, some stick in the mind for the wrong reasons. David?
Yeah, well, Mick always tells us about the certain Notts Alliance Cup final. So, in other words, your most memorable match and the reasons why.
I'm going to use creative freedom and go for one that's Premier League football and one that's grassroots, if you don't mind.
Tory Press, what we'll Premier League game is?
We'll start on the 12th of May, 2013. Manchester United 2, Swansea 1. The last game managed at Old Trafford by Sir Alex Ferguson. very much a once in a lifetime. If I'm ever lucky enough to have kids, I'll be telling my kids about going to that game, and I'll be showing them the pictures and the videos. And we lifted the title on the same day. I don't think for love nor money I'd have given my ticket away that day. A priceless experience, I think, for me. Second one, 29th of November 2008, Eastwood Town 2, Wycombe Wanderers 0. FA Cup second round, little old Eastwood only in the proper rounds of the FA Cup for the second time in their history, beating a, as they were at the time, unbeaten in every competition, Wycombe, managed by Peter Taylor. It was at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, it was foggy, it was wet. A lad that come through Eastwood's academy, Lyndon Meikle, who went on to play for Mansfield, scored the first, and Peter Knox the second. There was the main coverage on ITV's highlights. They knocked Harrogate Town and Wrexham on the way to that game. If you look back at the coverage, you see a young face me run by with a replica FA Cup lid on his head while they're having a pitch invasion at the end.
Shocking.
The only downfall is the third round draw. Eastwood get drew against the only other non-league side left in it, away at Kettering, who beat us on the day and got Premier League Fulham at home. Yeah. But again, good trip, good memories of a team. But yeah, I couldn't pick out a bad memory. They had to be two good ones.
No, fair enough.
I'd have loved to have been at the Man United Swansea one just to make sure he did go. Was it Holland or France that we spoke about that in their version of the FA Cup, it is basically seeded that the teams in the top two divisions have to play a team from the lower divisions and also have to play them away? Do you reckon that that's making it too technical, or is it just better to just see what comes out the hat?
I think that's France, isn't it?
France, is it? I can't remember which one it was. I've got it stuck in my mind it was one of them.
I think the FA Cup losers, I accidentally nearly did the four cup run last year. I only missed the second round, but if we're speaking about the FA Cup, I think it loses a lot of its glamour when it goes to the first round. I think seeing a step five side go to a step two side actually has a lot more interest and potential than a League Two side getting drawn against a United or a City or a Liverpool or a Chelsea or an Arsenal. I think that's where it loses a lot of its glamour now. And now they've put it behind the paywall on TNT Sport, it's another nail in the coffin.
It isn't. I mean, the fifth round's coming up this week and it's all midweek. What's that all about? It's just wrong. Anyway, this is the last one we're doing of these for the time being, but I've saved the best until last. We look how other countries work their pyramid system, and to be quite honest, so far we've almost been the same as what we're doing in this country, the same principle at least. So let's find out how they do it in Italy.
Yeah, and as you're going to guarantee here, and there's no doubt there'll be a flurry of Italian teachers offering to give me Italian lessons. Like ourselves, the Italian system is based on a promotion and relegation. The first tier of the Italian football is Serie A, which is governed by the Liga Nazionale Professionisti. Serie A is made up of 20 teams. The second tier is Serie B, which is organised by Liga Nazionale Professionisti B. Oh, there you go. I struggled the first time, so it's not got any easier the second time around. Both those leagues cover the whole of Italy. The third tier, Serie C, is run by the Ligue Italiana Calcio Professionisti. It's got three divisions of 20 clubs. Each are generally split based on their location. At the fourth tier is Serie D, a league of 9 parallel divisions in which the clubs are divided by geographical location. And that is organised by the Dipartimento Interregionale of the Liga. Oh dear, Nazionale Dilettanti. I can only apologise to anybody that's got a smattering of Italian on this one.
And beneath it gets these,
better. Yeah, beneath these are 5 further levels. 3 of them, the Excellenza, Promozione, Prima Categoria, they're organised by regional committees of the Liga Nazionale. Oh dear, Dilettanti, and the last 2 levels, Seconda Categoria and Terza Categoria, by provincial committees. All 100 Serie A, Serie B, Serie C clubs are professional. A couple of facts: Juventus and Milan and Internazionale have dominated the league since World War II, having won 57 of the 74 seasons. And in 2010, when the split between the Liga Serie A and Liga Serie B, Italy became the sole country with 3 professional leagues. The question is, how does that affect promotion and relegation in the terms of Italian football? I wouldn't even like to guess. I can't even say it.
Well, that's a bit I can't answer, because I've looked everywhere. So unless Luke knows something that I don't know on this one, if you've got 3 leagues there, how the hell do you get, what's the criteria to becoming a professional club? Because I cannot understand how they do it. But that's Italy for you.
Imagine it would work like kind of the playoffs do over here in National League North and South, that you have potentially, if 4 go down from Serie D, your 3 champions go up and the rest go into a playoff.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. I still like the Dutch best, where, you know, there is a system there, but if you don't want to do it, you can basically opt out. And I don't know. I think that we're seeing this with the Northeast teams at the moment. A lot of them are struggling. Right, news time. Totally locally.
Just one little fact for you before we go off of Italy. Did you know AC Milan was formed by a group of English gentlemen, one of which used to play for Nottingham Olympic? Herbert Kilpin, no. he actually came from Nottingham, and I found this out by chance. I was walking up Mansfield Road, and there was an Italian, a gentleman in an AC Milan top, sort of said to me, gave me his phone, can you take a picture of this house, or a converted shop, and there's a little plaque AC Milan on it. And I was intrigued, and I sort of said, why? And he'd come all the way from Milan for the weekend just to see this house. And he was explaining about the founder, so I looked it up. Yeah, so the a gentleman from Nottingham that worked in the lace industry was one of the founder members of AC Milan, and they still revere him over there. There's big sort of, when the banners come out, there's pictures of him in the old kit and stuff. So,
haven't Notts County got some sort of connection with Juventus?
Yes, I believe they probably with people going out to work over there in the sort of lace and cloth trade and stuff like that. Didn't they give them the first kit? Which is why Milan for a while play in the black and white stripes. In fact, there was a famous friendly, wasn't there, recently, I think?
Yeah, they played through, didn't they?
Notts gave Juve their kit. Juventus played in pink before then, I believe. And I believe Notts opened Juventus' new ground. They played the opening friendly.
Wow.
They moved from the Delle Alpi to what they're in now.
There you go, you see. Things you learn on Grassroots Plus. Right, totally locally. Oh, we're back to Doncaster.
Yeah, well, that, hopefully I'm not going to mispronounce half these places nearly as bad as the last section. Last Saturday's, the top of the table clash in the Central Midlands North Division was also going to attract interest. Add to the mix, Doncaster City's Friday signings of former international players, Wes Hoolihan, Ross McCormack and Charlie Mulgrew, and it was no surprise that 923 spectators turned up. Away from the sideshow, City inflicted a first defeat of the season on Durnan District to move within 7 points of them with two matches in hand. And remember that this is Step 7 football. The signings may have been down to the influence of the football agent who bought the club. City didn't apply for the pyramid, and that's got many thinking they could merge with Armthorpe where they ground share.
It's amazing. Right. And that actually leads us to the question of the week. And what we want to know this week from you, and to keep Mr. Pickerel busy over the weekend, who is the highest profile player that you've seen play in grassroots football? So we'll put a bit of a on this one. So we're talking about step five or below. Mine is John Robertson playing for Aslockton, that neck of the woods. He's got a pub out there. He played in the Sunday Morning Football League at in Newark. Greyhounders, that's who he played for.
Greyhounders.
And he played in the Newark Sunday League. So Robbo played in the Sunday League. Luke, who's the highest profile player that you've seen kick a football?
Oh, in non-league, are we talking after they've had the career? Because
yeah,
I remember watching Jamie Vardy play for Stocksbridge.
No, after. Let's put some criteria and say after.
After.
But you can have Jamie Vardy. Why not? Yeah, Jamie Vardy. Good answer.
I saw about four seasons ago, saw Chris Waddle play for Long Bennington Vicks at the YMCA when he scored a goal from about the halfway line, which was quite. I wasn't expecting to see that at all. I just happened to walk past. Oh, there's a game on. Who's that? Oh, it's Chris Waddle. Wow.
So there you are, folks. Get yourself involved because we like it when you get involved. And I know David likes it because he thinks people's talking to him on social media. Carry on, David.
Well, last week we told you about Quorn's management team leaving the club. We now know why. The pair have taken over at the Southern League Premier Central side, Kettering Town. Shane Gibson has stepped down as manager of Leicester St Andrews. Ross Perkins will take over with immediate effect. Basford manager James Jepson resigned on Monday with his team one place above Step 3 relegation's trapdoor.
You keep your eye on Basford more than we do, Luke. What's happening there?
I don't know, to be honest, because I think he signed a contract to the end of next season a few weeks beforehand. I know that it's been in-house who's took over. I think his assistant and the academy manager are managing at the minute, but the results have picked up from when he took over. I don't think they've won in 10, but they're in a lot better place in the league than they were when he took over. So I don't know, to be honest.
Strange one. Right. And now a relatively funny one, to be honest.
Yes, particularly as it's a Phoenix club that you're not keen on. 800 AFC Bury supporters took the ferry over to the Isle of Man at the weekend. The team chose to fly, but with the island shrouded in fog, the flight was turned back. The sun did shine on Sunday. The players made it at the second attempt, and a crowd of over 2,000 saw the Phoenix club take the points back to the mainland. But yeah, there was all sorts of outcry on Saturday, wasn't it? Because the players said they weren't going to go and they weren't going on the ferry. And yeah.
I'll tell you what, the pubs and the bars and the hotels of the Isle of Man haven't done bad, have they? Because they've got the Kendal Town supporters there for about 4 days. Why EasyJet or Ryanair could find a plane to bring them home. And now suddenly these Bury supporters had a long weekend.
Yes, it does make you wonder if they've perhaps said to the fixture secretary, send the four or five biggest teams out, supported teams out in the winter, will you?
Right, below the pyramid.
A remarkable six clubs have folded in the last week. Step 7, Ashby Ivanhoe Knights, the highest profile, and that's a result of the club's pitch problems. From East Anglia, Claydon, Cowley Wanderers and West Mersey, up north, Newcastle City, and from the Bedfordshire League, Premier Division, it's Sharnbrook. Six in a week. That's dreadful.
That's the ones that we've found.
Yes.
Right. And I have reworded this now. Now to look at one of the teams that we'll remember this season for all the wrong reasons.
Tees FC sit bottom of the North Riding Premier Division with 20 defeats from 21 matches, their only victory coming at Richmond Town Reserves. But like many others, they played an ineligible player and they lost the 3 points. So far, they have managed to leak 157 goals at their home, the Northfield Sportsdrome, and that's in Stockton-on-Tees. They have scored 7 and conceded 87 in 12 matches.
That's 12 home matches. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. Finally, and I did chuck. I mean, I'm a great fan of Neil Warnock. He's old school. He really is. And he's now stuck right up there in Aberdeen. He lives in Plymouth, for God's sake. He's in his 70s. I mean, he is a proper footballing man. But this was his interview, I think, this week.
Yeah, well, a decision, I think, had gone against them, and he said he was going to speak to the officials. So the commentator, Neil, did you get an explanation from the officials? No. He said VAR's a computer. I think it's the Horizon computer.
Brilliant. Oh, absolutely brilliant. And that brings us to a close. David, do the honours.
Yes, Luke. Well, thank you very much for joining us again, taking Mick's abuse. As you know,
I was very well behaved.
Yeah, well, I'd hate to see him when he's not. Thanks a lot for coming in. Always a pleasure. And look forward to bumping into you at a game nearby soon.
Okay, thank you for having me again. Appreciate the offer to come on.
And just keep that old Twitter X, or whatever they call it, going. Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire football. People that don't look at it, get on there, have a look at it. It's not difficult to find, is it, Luke?
No, it's at Notts Derby F Ball, just because I didn't have enough characters for a username for anything else.
I must admit, I do like your CFAX teletext thing, because as Mick said, of a certain age, that's the only way you found out the results, before the internet. And I mean, a couple of times, I remember my dad would listen to the classified results to do his football pools coupon. And if he'd missed one out or couldn't remember what it was, we'd shoot down the road to the local TV shop, who used to leave it on page, whatever it was, 601, on, and it would roll round, and sometimes we'd wait in the rain for 10 minutes for the results to come up again. So, yeah, that was great. Next week, we've got Joe Skelton's coming in. Apparently, he's commentating tonight. So that's the commentator, freelance non-league reporter, and he runs the Match Days Vlog channel on YouTube. And I think you know Joe, don't you? Or you've met him a few times.
Yeah. Nice lad, Joe. Stuck with him past two nights, to be fair, the past two games. I mean, vlogged one, he didn't vlog the other, but yeah, he'll have some good insight for you.
So please, if he suddenly finds another booking next week, I'll tell him Luke's coming round to sort him out.
Please tell me he's not a Manchester United supporter.
He's not. He's Doncaster Rovers, and I think he's got a bit of a soft spot for Liverpool as well.
The first bit I'll go with.
Yeah,
the second one.
The first bit I can cope with.
So how do you two get on then?
You can't judge a player. You can't judge a person by the football club.
Oh, I like that one. Yeah,
very good.
Very good. Brilliant. As ever, guys, thank you very much. I'm going to say good night. David?
Good night.
Luke?
Good night.
See you all again next week. We'll do it again. Bye-bye.